Now, this is Box to Box with Rob Gilbert and Michael Edgley.
Oh, what a goal!
For Chemist Warehouse.
Home of real brands and real savings.
Absolutely fantastic!
Hello and welcome back to Box, the show that is everything football on Macquarie Radio NTS News Talk Sport. You're with Rob Gilbert and Michael Edgley. After the news with Mark Van Aken, we'll talk to the Sydney Morning Herald's Sebastian Hassett to go through the PFA crisis before Dean Hennessy to talk through this weekend's Round 15 A-League action. And while we're on Round 15, the Sydney Derby is the blockbuster match of the round. So after Dean analyses the game, we'll speak to both sides for their view. First, Andrew Redmayne from the Western Sydney Wanderers, then one of the rising stars of the Sky Blues, Chris Namoff, to get his opinion. We're also excited to be chatting to Socceroo Tommy Orr in the second hour when he joins us from Championship side Ipswich Town about his first season in the UK and his new club's drive towards the Premier League playoffs. And of course, Ben Soro Perez will talk everything else that is Europe before Mark Van Aken wraps it up with stoppage time. Edge, as always, another massive week in football.
It certainly has, Rob. And it's all about the Sydney Derby tonight. I'm going to call it right from the beginning. This is the biggest game in home and away Australian A-League football. Clearly better than the Melbourne Derby.
Clearly?
Clearly better.
Grand statement.
Clearly
Who's
better.
That voice in the back?
It is massive. That's what it's about tonight. It's about celebrating.
Yeah, but
the
we
Sydney
also
Derby.
Need to know exactly what's going on. What the hell is going on in this PFA crisis?
Yeah, that's interesting.
Seb's going to help us. And Tommy Orr, it's great to have him from the UK and Ipswich Town.
Tractor boy, Tommy Orr.
Excellent. So, Mark, what have you got for us, mate? The news is next.
Yeah, sorry, mate. I jumped in before I was introed.
I know, but mate, we're a broad church here on Box to Box, mate, and it's a triumvirate that runs it, and you're part of that triumvirate.
Good to hear.
What you got, brother?
Well, boys, Lionel Messi won the Ballon d'Or this week. Big news, that one. Bit of a yawn, as far as I'm concerned. It's the fifth time he's won it. He's obviously a champion player, but is next year, 2017, the year his duopoly with Cristiano Ronaldo ends? Are we going to see a Neymar get up there? Because it's a bit boring. If it's not one, it's the other.
Hmm. Yeah, I agree. I mean, I don't understand why players in the biggest competition in the world don't even get mentioned in dispatches.
Well, Philipp Lahm agrees with you, the German defender. He has his own blog on goal.com. He's teed off. I've only got the best excerpts about it. But he said, and I quote, "How about selecting the candidates for next year's FIFA Ballon d'Or via Facebook? That would be a modern way of doing it, and the result would probably be the same as Monday's election. The three most popular players on Facebook are Cristiano Ronaldo with 108 million followers, Lionel Messi with 81 million, and Neymar Jr. with 54 million fans. First, I want to make it clear that Ronaldo, Messi, and Neymar are fantastic footballers. It is beyond any question that they have rightfully reached the final shortlist numerous times. I believe, however, when FIFA hands out an award, it should not be a marketing prize that solely honours the protagonists of a media-crazy sport. Gents, Fabio Cannavaro was the last defender to win it back in 2006. Mm. Has Philip got a point?
I think he has, but I'm a bit disappointed in Neymar. He's only got 54 million fans. There's 280 million people in Brazil. You reckon that everybody's got a Facebook account in
Brazil?
He's
catching up on our Box to Box account, though, isn't he?
He is. That reminds us on Box to Box, you can follow us on Facebook or Twitter, and Mark would be appreciative of that because he's feeling a bit inferior.
Absolutely. Now, Pep Guardiola has apologised if his public statements that he would like to move to the Premier League next season have put pressure on any managers in England's top flight. The Bayern Munich manager announced in December he would leave the German club at the end of the season and confirmed that for his next job, he would like to manage a club in England.
Why would he bother? I mean, what's the point of apologising? He knew what he was saying first up. But everyone knows that there's going to be at least two or three managers sacked.
I'll quote him speaking in Doha where Bayern are on a winter training camp. He apologised. He said, "I am sorry. Normally in my career as a manager, as a player, I respect a lot of my colleagues, so I'm sorry. It was not my intention." But of course, no matter what, he's now heavily linked, of course, to United, City, Chelsea, etc., etc.
He's trying to have his cake and eat it too, by the look of it.
Well, I've never understood that saying, Rob. Why would you want a cake if you can't eat it? Anyway, moving on.
We're not getting into that.
It doesn't make sense. Tom Rogic is rumoured interest from Leeds United. They put in a $2 million bid with Celtic. David Lewis, I think it was, on the World Game, suggesting that needs to be tripled for that to be taken seriously. Couple of questions. Have Leeds United even got $6 million?
That was my first question.
But would it be a good move for Tom to get out of the SPL into the Championship?
I think it would.
Yeah, but not to that club, not to a club who's got such an uncertain future with an owner that makes decisions on a whim. He's got opportunities with other clubs, doesn't he? Surely he doesn't have to go to Leeds.
You would think so.
Look, Leeds, there's a bit of romance with them, especially for an Australian, as much as they're sort of down in their luck for the last seemingly decades. So, anyway, the remarkable transfer of Mariners midfielder Anthony Caceres, of course, was completed this week. The group owning Manchester City has bought him. The 23-year-old still most likely to end up at Melbourne City in the long term. Gents, is the City Football Group flexing its muscles again? We've seen Luke Bratton head to Manchester with basically zero chance of obviously ever seeing first team football with Man City.
He then went on Bolton.
That's right. He was went on the disastrous loan spell at Bolton. That really wasn't his fault, of course. Bolton in going down the toilet very quickly, so no fault of his own. But is this good? We're just seeing the City Group just buying up players. It's almost like Channel 7 buying the NSL rights and just not then putting them on TV. What do you think?
Exactly. I mean, it just doesn't make sense that you'd have one organisation in such control. It defies belief, beggars belief.
It does. Now, we've got a little bit of time. Wanderers chairman Paul Lederer has unveiled plans for the A-League club to be based at a new $30 million state-of-the-art complex from next season. As Western Sydney prepares to host the derby for the last time before Pirtek Stadium is razed and rebuilt, Lederer detailed for the first time the plans to build a world-class football club based at a new complex in Rudy Hill. And without offending our Western Sydney friends, that would be the first time anything in Rudy Hill was world-class, I would have thought.
Oh, the Rudy Hill RSL gets a lot of exposure. Venue.
Mate, Rudy Hill's RSL is famously known as being the Vegas of the West, mate.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that sums it up. Over to you, Rob.
Okay, guys, that's a fantastic start to the show by Mark Van Aken. That's the news. We're going to talk more about it in stoppage time. But we've got Sebastian Hassett coming up next from the Sydney Morning Herald. We really want to know what's going on with the PFA crisis, just how it's going to roll out, some of the ramifications and the key players involved on Box to Box.
Box to Box.
Can you believe it?
For Chemist Warehouse,
home of real brands and real savings.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
Welcome back to Box to Box, and it's great to have Sebastian Hassett from the Sydney Morning Herald back on the show to talk us through the PFA crisis. Back in November, the CBA agreement was completed after what appeared to be a ham-fisted period of negotiation by all parties. But now it's emerged that players from 7 out of the 10 A-League clubs have signed a no-confidence motion in PFA CEO Adam Vivian. Seb, can you give us the 60-second summary of this before we go into the detail, mate?
Yeah, I think you summed it up pretty well, actually, and I think probably the key word was ham-fisted, and that is certainly how a lot of players viewed the CBA negotiations. I mean, look, there's no doubt that the PFA was driving a really hard bargain. They wanted to bite off plenty in this round of discussions, and they believed they could get it. But a lot of the players weren't quite... They weren't so pleased with how it was sort of carried out, the public nature of certain things and the not-so-public nature of other things. They thought that, for example, when David Gallop went on the front foot and attacked the players for their greediness, they thought that the PFA could have done more to defend the rights or the interests of players, certainly during the negotiating period. There was a lot of back and forth, and the residual, I guess, result was quite a bit of... distrust grew between certain players and members of the executive, the PFA executive, and of course the CEO Adam Vivian, who the no confidence motion has been tabled towards. So, look, an extremely tumultuous period for an organisation that, until now, has been incredibly united.
Seb, there's a lot to this. You've written a piece, but there is... Let's just break it down a couple of items. First of all, on Adam Vivian, he's taken over from Brendan Schwab, who had two goes in between Nick Holland's brief appearance in the gig. Mm-hmm. They're big shoes to fill. Brendan's a very charismatic character. I know Adam's a very different type of person to Brendan, but he had a baptism of fire. He had the Western Sydney Wanderers Club World Cup dispute around pay, which got a bit ugly. There was a bit of stuff in the media about that. There was sort of innuendo that they weren't going to play and whether they were going to get on the plane. So that sort of kicked off his tenure at the PFA, and it sort of continued along that line, where I got the impression Brendan in the past was very much a behind closed doors. You know, I'm sure he shook the fist and banged the table, but Adam's been very quick to be public about disputes and pull the trigger on threats, hasn't he?
Yeah, he has. And I think that is certainly something that I think he was encouraged to do by a lot of people who thought that the PFA... had a lot of runs on the board and was entitled to be something of an agitator. And I think he certainly took that to heart, and he has been very public on numerous fronts, on numerous issues, very frequently. But equally, I think there has been certainly some players in particular who feel that perhaps he's been a bit too vocal about certain things, a bit too ready to get on the front foot. I'd be reluctant to use the word trigger happy, because I actually think Adam's a very smart guy, and maybe what's been lost in all of this is he's a good operator, and I think he certainly has a future as an administrator in the game. Certainly in the role that he has, I think he has the potential to do a very good job. However, he has lost the support of some key, his constituency, basically, which is a pretty much an untenable position to have when you've got 7 out of the 10 clubs are not renewing their subscriptions. Now,
just explain to us what that means. That is
all right, yeah.
That is very significant.
It is a critical factor. Probably does measure the level of discontent in concrete, because historically the PFA has boasted that they have 100% membership, or at worst something like 98.5%, I think it might have been 1 year. But they've always had total take-up of the players. Players have backed in this union, and the union's come up with some tremendous outcomes for the players, certainly in the A-League era. I'm not just talking about domestic players as well. Any player who's played in Australia, in the A-League, or in the NSL, as it were, is entitled to be represented by the PFA. So a lot of Australian players who went abroad, I can think of guys like Michael Thwaite, who had terrible problems in Romania, the PFA would come in and solve them. So historically they had a tremendous rapport with the playing group who they represented well, and became a massive player in Australian football. They helped formulate the original plan for the A-League Edge. I know you knew a lot about this at the time, the Australian Premier League, I think it was called, with
That's
the
great,
blueprint
yeah.
that
Very good
Brendan
document.
Schwab... it was, absolutely, and many people credit that with being the document on which the A-League was formed. So the history of the PFA is long-storied and something they're very proud of. The fact that it's fallen now to 7 out of the 10 member clubs not subscribing, so we're basically looking at about 30% membership, means basically that they're incredibly unhappy with what's going on. And what I should point out, I don't think it's just limited to Adam Vivian. The executive of the player executive of the PFA has quite a number of members on it, and they are at odds with each other. That's where the real civil war, so to speak, is happening, because a lot of the players on there, some of the particularly senior guys, Ante Kovic, Matty Mackay, Lee Broxham, they are very much in Adam Vivian's corner on this one. So it's not as though he's lost the total support of everyone in the football community, certainly among the players. It's just that they're very divided. Some players are pulling with him, and others are looking for a new direction.
You're listening to Sebastian Hassett, and you're with Rob Gilbert and Michael Edgley on Box to Box on NTS News Talk Sport. We're talking about the PFA crisis and how it's come to this pass, and my next question really is, how does it get resolved? It seems that now that the CBA's in place, the key negotiation point that the PFA represented the players for has been done and dusted, so the need for the PFA to represent the individual players and clubs has probably been put to the back burner just slightly, giving the players and the PFA some breathing space to negotiate an outcome. But it seems there's as much animosity off the pitch as there is on it during the hottest of hot derbies right now. How's this going to get resolved, mate?
Look, it's very hard to see exactly how it's going to play out, because there's quite a few factors at play. You mentioned they've got a bit of breathing space. Well, actually not that much, because CBA negotiations tend to start about 18 months before the to expire, so to speak, on the new deal. So that actually isn't that far away. So the PFA will be rearming themselves for the next deal, you'd think, inside the next 12 months. So they want to have their house in order before they do that. So they really want to make an outcome where everyone is on board. I did see a document that was shown to me by one of the players, which pertained a list of questions that was, which the PFA put to this disgruntled group, and the group has written back with all their answers. explaining why they're unhappy, what they want changed, and I detailed that in the article. For example, the look at how they were perceived to be looked as greedy during the process, the things that they want to change. Now, if Adam Vivian and the executive who are on his side can actually convince them that, look, maybe we made a few mistakes and we're willing to listen to everyone a bit more, and we want everyone on side, then it is possible they can salvage the situation. That is not impossible, but in saying that, those guys who've gone out on a limb, as I understand it, have done so pretty strongly. And if they don't follow through with calling for a general meeting, which I understand that they will, they only need 5% of the PFA membership to do that. If they don't follow through with moving on Adam Vivian, I'd suggest they probably have to move on themselves. So, look, it's an extraordinary situation, and certainly one that I don't think many of us saw coming. And certainly I think there'll be a few people at the FFA, well, I know there is a few people at the FFA already going around saying, we told you so. It was obviously a very acrimonious set of discussions during the negotiation period, and they went through with the way the PFA conducted themselves. So, look, guys, it's just an incredible situation, and I hope, because I think the PFA actually does serve a very, very important role in the game, I really hope they can come to some sort of resolution that gets everyone back on board.
Yeah, all those key issues you mentioned about governance, transparency, trust. I mean, apart from the handling of the CBA saga, they're such broad-ranging umbrella statements. How, when you've got seven clubs out of a 10-team competition, you can resolve those issues with the same management is beyond me. I hope they manage to do it for everybody's sake, but it seems there's a fair way to go before that comes to pass.
Yeah, I think it might be a little while yet. I'm not sure that there's... It has been dragging on for quite a while, I should say, even though this story's just come out. There's been a lot of mud being slung behind the scenes for quite a while now. And you do feel that sooner or later it's going to have to come to a head in a more formal way than what it has been. At least I think it's out in the open now, so everyone's going to be honest with themselves. And I think even those players who are agitating for change are not necessarily saying, we want to disband the PFA. They're just saying, we want what's best for us. We want what's best for the game. They've just got a different idea about it than the current leadership does. So, that will all come to a head very soon, I'm sure.
It sure will, mate. And I don't think we're going to resolve it in this conversation. We'll be looking for your next article, because you seem to be leading the story on this, Seb. So thanks again for coming on Box to Box, mate. We'll watch out for the next exciting episode in the PFA saga.
Pleasure, guys.
That was Sebastian Hassett. Next up, Dean Hennessy with his weekly A-League Roundup.
Box to Box. For Chemist Warehouse,
home of real brands and real savings.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
This is Box to Box on NTS News Talk Sport. You're with Rob Gilbert and Michael Edgley on digital radio, streaming on the NTS app. You can also search for NTS on TuneIn Radio. All thanks to our very good mates and fantastic supporters, Chemist Warehouse. And now, with his usual analysis of the A-League Round 15, former Notts County man and 250-game veteran of the Victorian Premier League, Dean Hennessy.
Hello, gents. How are we?
Hello, Dino. Do you buy your sunscreen from Chemist Warehouse, Dino?
I do. Extra red.
Yeah, you look like you got a bit of sun.
It's
over
called
the
pressure.
It's been hot
under these conditions.
It is. Hey, big round of A-League coming up, Dino.
Look, I think
kicks off tonight. Melbourne Victory and Brisbane Roar.
Yeah, look, I mean, round 15. Obviously, that's what we're going to focus on tonight. But another great round in round 14, and I guess the first game cab off the rank is Victory in Brisbane. It is a massive game. Brisbane, obviously, the team in form, top of the league, had a little blip last week at Wellington, albeit the last 5-10 minutes was unbelievable. You know, end to end, both teams had many chances to win it. And then Victory, well, how to make a job even harder. I mean, if the boy Austin doesn't score that fourth one to make it 4-0, very similar to his goal that he scored, which was the third. But then, like most, only Victory can do. They have an unbelievable appetite not to get beat.
That was extraordinary. I know it's a week ago, but who would have thought Central Coast 3 goals in the first 35 minutes of the game?
Well, we talked on last week's show about them not too familiar with that Geelong And I'm thinking Central Coast might move there the way they played first half. But look, unbelievable comeback. And really, at the end, they were hanging on Central Coast. But look, entertaining. That's what the A-League's been. It's really been good this year. There's been a lot of games that, you know, have entertained us. And I was getting messages as that game was going on. Oh, it's, you know, because my boys went to the game. Oh, it's 2-0, 3-0. I'm thinking, oh, yeah, just, you know, am I surprised by it? And I wasn't, because I thought it was victory we're winning. Unbeknown, you get the update and it's half-time 3-0 down. Unbelievable score.
But to his credit, after the game, Tony Walmsley at least acknowledged that that was what the club ethos was all about, entertainment, and that's what we saw. So he was entitled to be disappointed and to look disappointed, but watching him on the sideline after the game, I thought he handled himself for a guy who's under a lot of pressure at the moment with real grace and class.
Yeah, I agree with that. I saw that as well, and I also heard his interview, and he did the same. You know, he you know, obviously was disappointed in, you know, 3-0 lead, possibly could have been a 4-0 lead, and then obviously then to lose it late, you know, Berisha again with a header. And again, he said, look, victory in the end, most probably should have still won. So
just last one for me on that before we, you know, we get a prediction on the game. But I read during the week, I was having a bit of a Facebook conversation with a great former NSL player, Peter Salakis, Gus.
I know Gus well.
Yeah, and Gus was making the point that he thought Tony Walmsley would coach very differently when you're 3-0 up if you've got a relegation battle on your hands and you're actually thinking about the relegation rather than just development of players. I thought he made a good point because, you know, when you're 3-0 up and your life depends on the game, it's sheep station stuff, rather than, you know, getting time into younger players for development, you would coach differently, wouldn't
100%,
you?
100%. You know, I've obviously had a 15-year career and, you know, was successful at one end of the table, and obviously had our battles at the other end of the table during the journey. And doesn't matter if you're top of the league or bottom of the league and you're close to 3 points and there's not long to go, you coach different, you know. And sometimes you even tighten up as a coach, you know, because you can sense that you're almost over the line and you're almost begging it to get across the line and the final whistle goes. So I agree. I think without relegation, you know, it is a bit of a freer role. And, you know, I know there's, you know, you've got an establishment that you've got to promote out in that marketplace. But again, this, you know, when you come to the real deal, it's all about winning football matches.
And both clubs have got a swag of players over at Oli Roos in the Middle East with Oli Roos. So different, really different teams on tonight's game.
Yeah,
so
it
what
does.
Do you reckon, Dean?
Well, look, I think the key is that for me, Jamie McLaren's not out there. And I think he's missing where Berisha isn't missing. And I think that could be the difference. I think with victory, though, they've got to defend better. I mean, they've conceded 3 last week. Could have been 4, as we've already discussed. And Brisbane, even though they faltered a little bit in regard to not scoring and hitting the target, Enrique starting generally doesn't score when he starts, but does really well when he comes off the bench. So John Aloisi, I'll have his, you know, thoughts on how does he approach that. And I just think victory now, they are unbeaten, you know, in the last 4 games. I think, you know, victory's got to go out there with a positive attitude and try and win the game.
You're with Dean Hennessy on Box to Box, talking to Rob Gilbert and Michael Edgley on NTS News Talk Sport. And what a critical match it is in terms of the ladder as well before we go on to the derby tomorrow. Victory, a win, puts them into the top 4, pending other results over the weekend, a loss and a few other results going against them. And they're back down to that scrap for the bottom end of the 6. The Brisbane Roar, meanwhile, they lose, and Western Sydney win, they lose top spot on the ladder. There's so many different ramifications for the result.
Oh, look, it's now, from my point of view, victory's got to continue this run. It's 4 weeks unbeaten. Now they've got to go and push it into 5. Now, whether that be a draw, 3 points would obviously be better. And I just think they've just got to go in confident. You know, they have got players missing, but so have Brisbane. And it's going to be who settles on the day.
Okay, so Dino, prediction?
I think victory might just edge it.
Okay, righty. Let's go through the early game tomorrow. It's Adelaide and Central Coast. Just a really prediction from that, because we want to really talk about the feature match, the derby. Adelaide or Central Coast in Adelaide?
Informed team Adelaide. Central Coast bowled last week, but for me, Adelaide are flying. You know, great 3-1 win in Perth, and I can't see them getting beat at home.
Okay, let's unpick the derby. Arguably the most, or the biggest game in A-League home and away fixtures, Western Sydney and Sydney FC. Dino, 3 points and goal difference in favour of Western Sydney, but they've actually struggled against Sydney FC over the recent 5 derby. So what's your take of all of that?
Look, I know we've discussed that, you know, off air, and you look at the season that they had after the Champions League, and it was just a disaster. So there's a lot of games in there they lost, and they were never going to be at the races because they weren't at the races in the league. It's a totally different Western Sydney Wanderers now. I mean, they got beat last week. I was at the game. Should have won it. I mean, they had the chances and the controversy of the refereeing decision when, you know, he blows the whistle. In the end, I think it was the right decision. But, you know, again, you can say it's harsh in another way. I think, look, from my point of view, Sydney FC, I went to watch them the week before that when they played Melbourne City. And that was one of the most complete performances of the season that I'd seen from any team in the A-League. And I think it's going to be an unbelievable game. I mean, there's two different contrasting styles. They've got some familiarity about each other. The recent form, obviously, from Western Sydney Wanderers, you can't argue in the last 11 games they've won 8, drawn 2, and obviously got beat last week. Sydney, you know, obviously last week with the Ali Abbas situation, and, you know, we've highlighted that off air as well to talk about where that was a real boost to them in the squad. And I think he'll play a part, especially having had the injury against that opposition. There'll be a lot of feeling, a full house. I just think it's going to be a crackerjack. I think depends on which way both teams want to settle. They both defend really well. Sydney FC's got the most clean sheets, so we know they defend well. Western Sydney Wanderers got 6, which is only one less than Sydney FC. I think the key now would be down to the individuals. I think you've got to look at two points of view. You look at what needs to happen from Western Sydney Wanderers. I think Mitch Nichols, Mark Bridge, they've got to perform and score goals. Romeo Castellan's been unbelievable and was outstanding last week. And I think if they can provide that, they generally create from that right-hand
side.
Every
time he gets the ball, he's dangerous. Every time.
He is. And I think, you know, with him in that mood and actually getting then also, and a lot of praise needs to go to Jameson. You know, Jamo's had a great year. He actually a big thrust from the left-hand side, but a lot of the balls then do shift over to the right. So I think that it'll be in wide areas that Western Sydney Wanderers will try and expose the fullbacks of Sydney FC. On the flip side, Sydney FC, obviously their top goal scorer is out with injury, and, you know, the word I'm hearing is he won't be back, Broski, for the rest of the season. Which will be a shame for them because he's had an unbelievable year. Holosko is obviously now the one that they rely on, and he's joint top scorer. And I just think, for me, it's from their point of view, it's going to be the three central midfielders, you know, Dimitrijevic and the like in there with Tavares and Ninkovic. If they can get on the ball, set some really good moves on where very vulnerable, and I've looked at some of the stats that Western Sydney Wanderers are really vulnerable on set pieces. So I'm sure Arnie will have been working on that all week. And I think that could be a key because, you know, they're vulnerable at set pieces.
We're going to talk to Andrew Redmayne after the break and Chris Namoff from Western Sydney and Sydney FC respectively. But you mentioned Graham Arnold, the mad professor against Tony Popovich. Is the game going to be won and lost off the pitch with their efforts as much as the players on it?
Oh, look, you know, the detail that we go into now, especially on when you're looking at especially major games like this, everybody knows what each other are about and all the stats that we look and review. So we get a picture of what their trends are. They're looking at that in video and each individual knows exactly what their individual, who they're going to be playing against and how they'll act. So I just think it will be the team that settles first. I think the crowd is going to make a big difference, even though Sydney will bring a good contingent with them. Western Sydney Wanderers, as we know, is really loud there. They're on a roll. I mean, they got beat last week and, you know, for me, it wasn't a blip. It could have gone either way. It was still a very good away performance. And I just think Western Sydney Wanderers are playing really, really well. So in my opinion, I'm confident that if they can get it right and defend well and make sure they take the chances when they get it, there's no reason why they can't win.
Okay, a couple of little nuances for you, Dino, just to consider. I know you're leaning towards Western Sydney, but Ali Abbas. I mean, that was a big emotional occasion last week. You know, you saw the response of the team when he scored the goal. It was pretty special. He does spark them.
Look, he does. And when, you know, I've played in teams where you've got certain individuals that, you know, you want them out there on the park. You know, if they're out there, they're going to help you because they'll ignite something that maybe another teammate might not. And I think he brings that to the table, especially the emotional attachment to last week and what happened there. But this is now going back to where it all happened. And, you know, we've all had injuries and especially when they're serious injuries, which leaves you 14 months out of the game. There'll be a lot of pent up energy that's been built towards that. Now, that can sometimes go against you. You know, you can go the other way because it's all focused on that. And I think Arnie will have kept a real lid on that all week.
He's definitely one to watch because last time he played in a derby, LEBS, it was nearly World War III. So it'll be an interesting little dynamic to watch.
Oh, look, before his injury, he got under people's skin, and that was part of his game plan. Yeah. But we know he's come from humble, you know, surroundings and everything he's had to do in his life and, you know, bite and scratch to get out of it. And that's the way he lives. And his football, you know, reflects that when he performs. But I think from... Again, you say I'm leaning to Western Sydney Wonders. I actually rate Sydney FC. I think Sydney FC can go all the way this year.
Sounds like you're starting to sit on the fence here, don't
you?
Yeah,
a little bit of a... There is splinters. The only thing that worries me is are they going to score enough goals, and especially without Broski.
We've got two more games. We've got to get a prediction from you. What's the score going to be?
Tight affair, as I always go with, generally with the big games. They generally are tight affair. I think... I've got a feeling Western Sydney Wonders can win it. What's going to be really interesting in it's the last 15 minutes. They score all their goals in the last 15 minutes. So if for me, hold on to your hats because I think it'll be end to end towards the end, whatever the score. Draw wouldn't surprise me, but I'm going to give Wanderers just by a shade.
Well, it takes a while to get there, right?
Yeah, but what I enjoyed was the sigh and the pause after the question. What it does tell us all is that it's going to be, look, a cracking game. We would equally all be surprised if it was not one of the best games of the season than if we would win.
Well, what I most probably didn't add, which I should have, is as much as Western Sydney Wanderers score a lot of goals, so does Sydney. Between the two of them, 17 goals come in the last 15 minutes.
I noticed that in your notes.
So neither of them really lie down. So, you know, again, hold on to your hats because it will go the distance.
Okay, there's a late game tomorrow night as well. Last Chance Hotel. This has absolutely got to be for Perth glory. Melbourne City, meanwhile, they win away. They need to win. Their form indicates that they ought to be in it right up to their necks. And really, if they're going to be a title contender, they should take the points away from Perth.
Well, reading the press this week, obviously the Robert Corran situation is in review. And obviously he's a marquee and, you know, there's $1 million worth of salary going in that direction. I think Melbourne City are in tip-top form. Aaron Moy made a massive difference coming back. You know, former Roley's outstanding. I mean, that goal, the second goal, the first goal, what a finish, you know. And Navillo's been quality the last couple of weeks. It's been really, really good. So I've got a feeling, you know, look, there's only going to be one winner.
They're playing so well at the moment. We talked about this pre-show. They're playing so well. It was a shame that only 10,000 people saw them last week because they are playing so well.
And I think that's going to be a major thing moving forward. They have to go and support this team. They're one of the best to watch every week. They've got some of the best players. They've got the top goal scorer. They've got the most informed player in the league. For me, I can't see why people aren't coming.
Melbourne City are owned by one of the richest sporting organisations, let alone football organisations in the world. If they're going to back this team as one of their genuine divisions of the business rather than just a feeder for their operations, and they're the mob that really needs to spend a little bit of money and put their money where their mouth is. Okay, so tip in that game.
Oh, definitely Melbourne City.
Alright, and just briefly, a result for Newcastle Wellington. Are Wellington still in there with a chance after that draw last week of making the finals? They ought to win this one.
Look, it's I thought Wellington were good last week. I just want to also touch on a young man called Dylan Fox, who made his debut, played at Bonnie Rig last year, know him quite well, and he was outstanding in his debut to get the 3 votes. They didn't even have a photograph on Foxell, so they didn't even know he existed, but he was outstanding. He's going to be a really good footballer, this boy. And I think, from my point of view, if Wellington beat Newcastle, then all of a sudden the gap's going to be 6 points. And I think the bottom three, Newcastle, Perth and Central Coast, will struggle to then keep in touch. So for me, it's going to be Wellington on that form.
Dean, I hope this round is half as good as what you've built it up to be, mate, because if it is, we're going to be strapping ourselves in for an absolute cracker. That's Dean Hennessy talking everything about the A-League. Andrew Redmayne next from the Western Sydney Wanderers.
Box to box.
Can you believe it?
The Chemist Warehouse.
Home of real brands and real savings.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
You are on Box to Box on NTS News Talk Sport with Rob Gilbert and Michael Edgley. And we welcome back this week Andrew Redmayne. He's been on the show before. It's the massive Western Sydney Wanderers versus Sydney FC derby. Great to have you back on the show, Andrew.
Cheers, thanks for having me.
Mate, now do the nerves start to kick in a little when it's a derby? Or, mate, are we going to hear from you the one match at a time, just another 3 points, that sort of thing, mate? We want some honest feedback here, Andrew.
It's a bit of a cliche. I mean, building up to the game, it's just like any other game. But I think it really kind of hits you when you start to get to the stadium and there's more of a buzz around the ground, and then when you get on the pitch to have a warm up, and then when you finally do walk out on the field for kickoff, the atmosphere just hits you, and that's when you're in for a massive game.
Hey, you've played in derbies before in Melbourne, and obviously in this one in Sydney. Tell us what's better. Come on, don't sit on the fence here, Andrew. Is the Melbourne derby more passionate than the Sydney derby, or vice versa?
I'd probably say the Sydney's a bit better, mainly for the fact that Western Sydney fans, I think, are the best in the league. They're most passionate, the most vocal, and I just think overall they're the best fans in the league. And I think something that kind of lets down the Melbourne derby is the venue. So playing Etihad, the fans are quite a way away from the pitch, so you lose a bit of the atmosphere. So
hey, Rob,
those ones, I'd probably say the Sydney.
Hey, Rob, how lucky is this bloke? He's played in the Melbourne derby and the Sydney derby. How good's that?
Yeah, but wait till he comes back down to Melbourne when our Melbourne listeners heard what he just said.
Well, all I can do is yell at him, really. Hey, Andrew, the other thing that I wanted to ask you about was out at Parramatta, I believe this is the last time that you guys will play a derby before the renovations of the stadium. So that must be a bit special, last time that you get to experience the old-fashioned Western Sydney Wanderers stuff at Pirtek Stadium.
Yeah, I think it will be the last time. So no, it'll go down in the history books, and no doubt, I guess, yeah.
And tell us, mate, before a derby, do you notice that the instructions from your coaches are any different? Let's just talk about Popper in this case. He's an emotional guy. You see him on the sidelines getting really involved in the game. But does he give you any different instructions at all, or is that really just for the fans' consumption, the derby kind of discussion? Tell us the inside story.
Yeah, well, since I've been here, I mean, it's been a fantastic learning curve, and learning the way that not only Popper but the whole coaching staff kind of go about their work, and it's just been like any other game so far. I mean, we've had our standard video sessions, just on the normal content we kind of cover on different days, and like I said, it's really just one game at a time, and it just kind of hits you when you get to the ground, so I just can't wait to get out there on Saturday.
But in terms of the actual detail of the match, we've already had Dean Hennessy on previewing the whole round of A-League with a real specific focus on your match, and Chris Namoff from Sydney FC is going to come on. But some of the statistics, do the boys discuss the fact that you're 3 points apart and goal difference, you're undefeated in the last six games, but you haven't won a derby in 2 years? Does any of that conversation happen around the sort of lunch table, or when you're just having a kick after the heavy stuff of training finishes?
No, I wouldn't say too much. I mean, we discuss little stats here and there, but the only real ones we discuss are kind of the mind-blowing ones, or the really cool ones, I guess. But we never really talk about that kind of thing. We just focus on what we're doing, and I think we're carrying a lot of confidence and quite good form into this derby, and hopefully we can get a win on the board.
Just to pick up on Rob's question, so Andrew, do you get analysis on the attacking threats of Sydney, the preferred side for kicking, areas of the ground that they strike from? Do you have that information to analyse before the game, and in the cut and thrust of a match, do you rely on that?
Yeah, I mean, every player gets has their own individual iPads, and we get all reviews and previews of teams and players. So, it's up to the emphasis on the player to, learn and study those kind of things. Really that's a 1-3% difference on game day. So everything's, especially in this era, I mean, everything's so well analysed, and every little statistic is put in a graph, and then those graphs are put in other graphs, and everything just gets so well analysed, and it's up to you, the players themselves, to take note of it and take it into the field, because at the end of the day that could be the difference.
I listened to Tony Pignata, the CEO of Sydney FC, in an interview on Monday, and he refused to say your club's name. He just called you that other mob. And I'm sure he was doing that with a bit of a tongue-in-cheek, you know, reference trying to build up the hype of the game. But is there a serious, you know, feeling between the two playing groups, and is it more serious than other clubs?
Yeah, I mean, it's a derby. I mean, once you step over that white line, it's you know, there's no friendships on the pitch, I guess. So they're trying to win the game, we're trying to win the game, and that in itself creates a tense atmosphere, because you know there can only be one winner, and hopefully that's us on Saturday.
Last week against Melbourne City, was it the one that got away? You guys played incredibly well, but you came away from nothing with nothing from the game.
Yeah, I thought in the second half we probably dominated 40 minutes, if not more, of the second half. But you know, unfortunately, we're a bit unlucky not to capitalise on some great chances we created. So hopefully we can pop a couple of more in on Saturday, and hopefully keep a couple out as well.
And the threat of Ali Abassi came back last week. He scored in the 2-0 win for Sydney FC against the Jets. He injured that knee against your mob last time round. He's obviously going to have some scores to settle. How do you see him as a threat 2 weeks into his comeback?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a great story, and you know, he should be given the praise that he's given for you know, persisting, and it's always a tough road coming back from injuries, but. Yeah, you know, like I said, once you step on that over that white line, there's no friends in football, and you know, you'll just be treated as another player another player that we've done our thorough analysis on, and hopefully we can nullify that threat.
Andrew, just on your own personal situation, the club has obviously signed Liam Reddy. That's a new development over the last sort of 3 or 4 weeks. What can you tell us about that, and how's it been meeting Liam and starting to do some work with him?
Yeah, it's great. I mean, bringing someone in like Liam into the squad with such a vast experience of football is fantastic. And I think it adds extreme depth to the squad, and you need great depth to challenge for titles. So it's a fantastic inclusion, and I'm really, really enjoying working alongside him and picking his brains as well as him picking my brains, I guess, and just learning off each other under Spider.
You're with Rob Gilbert and Michael Edgley on Box to Box on NTS News Talk Sport on digital radio, streaming on the NTS app. You can also search for NTS on TuneIn Radio, the number one stopper for the Western Sydney Wanderers, Andrew Redmayne. We talked to him about the derby coming up this weekend. So, mate, you're sitting pretty on second spot. You know what it means to win this match. If you do win, there's the potential for you to go above the Brisbane Roar, depending on their result against the Melbourne Victory, of course, tonight. So how do you anticipate that much rolling out, you know, two of the other really important teams in terms of your conversation?
Yeah, I mean, I think that'll be a fantastic match to watch. You know, two very attacking sides and two sides that have, you know, probably, I think Brisbane a bit more so, but I think Victory really hit their straps in the second half last week against the Mariners, so... yeah, I think it'll be a great match to watch and one we'll thoroughly take note of.
So it wouldn't be very often you'd want Melbourne Victory to win, but I'd imagine on this occasion you'd be more than happy for them to get the points, give you the opportunity to go top.
Yes and no. I like to think that every week, every game can be a draw except the Wanderers. So, that's kind of what I wish for every week.
Good on you, Andrew. Well, mate, we wish you luck tomorrow night. It's going to be a cracking game in front of a full house. Should be a magnificent weekend of Round 15 A-League. Andrew Redmayne, great to have you on Box to Box again.
Cheers, guys. Thanks for having me.
Now, this is Box to Box with Rob Gilbert and Michael Edgley.
Oh, what a goal!
For Chemist Warehouse.
Home of real brands and real savings.
Absolutely fantastic!
Welcome back to Box on NTS Radio News Talk Sport. You're with Rob Gilbert and Michael Edgley. This hour, we talk to Socceroo Tommy Orr, currently plying his trade in the Championship with Ipswich Town, and of course, Ben Soro Perez to go through the Premier League and other European action before Mark Van Aken with stoppage time. But first, we've analysed the Sydney Derby with Dean Hennessy. We've talked to Andrew Redmayne from Western Sydney. So let's get the view from the other side of the city. Welcome for the first time to Box, Chris Namoff.
Hey guys, how's it going?
Real good, Chris. And for a Sydney boy, you're really passionate about your club. You're a guy that grew up in the Shire, and you're just getting really started in the early stages of your career. A derby match like this has got to be a real highlight.
Oh, definitely. Like you said, being a Sydney boy, you know, makes it a bit extra special. And Saturday night, you know, I'm sure the fans from both sides will come down in numbers and make it a really passionate game.
And in terms of being extra special, you're clearly a lifelong devotee of the game from the very first time you laced on a boot. You must watch the international derbies in the Premier League, La Liga, Serie A, those sorts of competitions. And when you get the chance to represent your club in a burgeoning derby that's really growing in stature, do you sense the history that you're involved in?
Oh, of course. And you know, it's a great feeling to play in probably the biggest derby in the country. And like you said, you know, watching these derbies overseas, you see the passion involved, and there's no difference in the Sydney derby. So, like you said, it's a great thing to be involved in, regardless which team you play for. And all the boys are really looking forward to Saturday night.
Chris, you're a product of the Sydney FC youth program. You made your full A-League debut when you were only 18 years of age. It feels like you've been around a little while, but tell us about your experience and your history with Sydney and what it actually means to you to pull on the sky blue and head out on the weekend in the biggest game of the year.
Yeah, like we were speaking about before, I was obviously born in Sydney, so I think I made my move to Sydney FC when I was about 16 years old. Played about two or three years in the youth team, and making my debut at 18 was obviously a special moment for me. I'm still quite young, and you know, since then I've never really tried to look back and just try to, you know, progress on my game, and I feel that, like, that's happened. So to be involved in these games is extra special, really.
You've made six appearances this season, and including the last two matches, the draw against Melbourne City and the win over Newcastle. Do you feel like you've got an opportunity now to try and cement a place in the starting 11?
Oh, definitely. Obviously, we have a few boys missing, so, you know, I'll be there to be called upon, and you can say it's definitely a chance for me to try and cement a position in the starting 11.
And just tell us, is it obviously the club signed some players at the beginning of this pre-season just gone. Were you a little bit frustrated that you weren't getting an opportunity early in the season, or did you understand that your time would come and it would be up to you to make the most of it when it did arrive?
Yeah, look, you always have to have faith in the coach and what he believes. So, obviously, pre-season's still early doors, and, you know, we reshuffle a bit and see how different things work. So the pre-season wasn't too bad, and it was also about getting to know the new players. So, yeah, it's not so much about getting frustrated. It's just trying to keep doing the right things in training and in games to keep improving and trying to get into our starting 11.
And speaking of those games, that game this weekend, is, from your point of view and your club's point of view, a genuine feeling of animosity, or is there a grudge feeling that you sense between Sydney FC and the Western Sydney Wanderers? We know the fans certainly get worked up, and you don't need to ask them twice whether they don't like each other. But do you get that sense that there is some real passion between the two groups?
Oh, look, definitely, you know, the week leading up to these sorts of games, there is a lot more excitement and passion in the lads. I'm not saying that it's too much different from every other week, but, of course, this is what derbies bring out in the boys and in the fans. So, like I've been saying, you know, it's just such a special occasion, and it's really what the footballing world looks forward to.
We're talking to Chris Kiki Namoff on NTS Box to Box with Rob Gilbert and Michael Edgley about the derby this weekend and how his club is approaching that match. And, mate, obviously we couldn't look at a match like this at the turning point of the season, how critical this game is for your status in the ladder, on the ladder, and your attempts to go one better than what you did last year. I want to ask you a question about that grand final. You clearly went in with great expectations and
clearly belief that you could have upset victory on their own home patch. It didn't happen. Your reflections on that game and how it set you, your season up personally in the clubs?
Yeah, obviously. Look, the week leading up to the grand final was something that I've never experienced before. Obviously, it was a first time for me, and it was something that was very different. So, obviously, the boys were extremely confident. It was a grand final, a one-off game to see who the champion is. And we went into the game like any other way, well prepared. And look, unfortunately, on the day it wasn't our game. But we got over that quickly and then reflected on such a great year that we had that year.
And so, going into this match, do the boys? I mean, we always hear these bland remarks from coaches and players from time to time about we're going to take it one day at a time, one match at a time, just 3 points at a time. But
it's just another game, Rob.
Yeah, it's just another game. But you know, from the point of view of a team looking for retribution that really wants to set its opportunity up in the finals, this one has got multiple layers to it, doesn't it, Chris? It's not only the fact that it's a derby, but it's also clear that in fourth spot, if Victory beat the Brisbane Roar tonight, they can leapfrog you, and that the margin between that double chance starts to spread. So there's a lot of narrative around this game in itself.
Yeah, you're definitely not wrong in saying that. Obviously, like you said, a lot of people say that we focus week by week, but such a crucial stage of the season. You know, the new year's come, and we'll obviously be very busy with the ACL coming in next month. So 3 points is very important for us every week, and also to win a game like this on Saturday night will do great for our confidence and building into the final weeks of the season, really.
What do you put down to the fact that Sydney, your club, have got the wood over Western Sydney Wanderers? You've beaten them four of the last five derbies, a draw in the other one, so you haven't lost for the past five games. You must be expecting a little bit more energy and passion and motivation from the Wanderers on the weekend. You must be bracing yourself for that.
Yeah, look, you could say that. We've had a great run of results against them, and you know that's just come down to our hard work and you could say that, but look, really, we just go into every derby wanting to win like any other team would. So we'll do the exact same on Saturday night and come away with the result we need.
Chris, just on last week's game, we can't leave the interview without asking you about Ali Abbas and the impact of that on the team and yourself personally. Just obviously watching Ali at training and seeing his journey, you must have been over the moon.
Oh, look, that... especially when he scored that goal and then when he was coming onto the pitch really gave me goosebumps. I mean, it was just such a surreal moment, especially when he scored and you know, to come celebrate with all the boys. There was not one person in our change room that wasn't over the moon for him, and he really deserved that, what he got on last Saturday against Newcastle.
Just tell us a little bit about the Ali Abbas that you know. What's the impact he's had on you personally?
Yeah, look, Ali's always been a great guy. I've obviously known him for a few years now, and you know, he's just a guy that works so hard, and you know, he's never complaining. He's always working just tirelessly, and you know, you can say that's the result against from the weekend, and that's the start. And he has a lot more to run, and that's what he's working hard for. So I'm just really happy for him for that.
Hey, Chris, we're breaking up a little bit there, mate. If you just watch the spot and try to maybe to move back to where you were when we originally started chatting to you, mate, because we're just starting to lose you a little bit there. Now, I used your nickname, Kiki. Is it the obvious one, or is it something from your Croatian background?
No, I'm actually Macedonian.
I meant to say that.
Yeah.
Say again.
No, look, it's been with me since I was really young. My grandmother actually gave me the name, and it stuck, so... Literally, everyone knows me as Kiki. My parents and close friends, everyone knows me as Kiki, and all the teammates and coaches and everyone, really. So that's sort of stuck my whole life.
What does it mean, mate?
Oh, it's just a nickname that my grandmother gave me. No.
Ask your grandmother for next time when we ask you. We want to find out from her, from
no
the real
dramas.
Source. Mate, look, we're going to end that on a light-hearted note. Chris, we want to wish you all the best for the derby tomorrow. And mate, look, hopefully it's just a classic match and all of those of us who are non-partisan supporters can enjoy a great game of football and you can come off the pitch healthy and hopefully with the result going your way.
All good. Thanks very much, guys, for having me on.
You're welcome, mate. Chris Namoff from Sydney FC. After the break, we'll have Tommy Orr.
Box to box.
Can you believe it?
for Chemist Warehouse,
home of real brands and real savings.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
Welcome back to Box to Box on NTS News Talk Sport. You're with Rob Gilbert and Michael Edgley on digital radio, streaming on the NTS app, and you can also search for NTS on TuneIn Radio. And our next guest is Tommy Orr, with over 30 national caps, including a World Cup in Brazil, plus a successful Asian Cup campaign last year. Tommy is a fixture in the national squad at club level. He made his name at the Brisbane Roar before 100 games over five seasons with FC Utrecht in the Dutch Eredivisie. Last year, Tommy went close to signing with Athletic Bilbao in La Liga before joining Ipswich Town in the Championship, where the Tractor Boys are in the midst of a fight for a playoff spot and a shot at the Premier League. Good to have you on Box to Box, Tommy.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So, Tommy, you had an injury-plagued start to your time in the UK, but last weekend you played your first full 90 minutes in over 3 months in the two-all FA Cup draw against Portsmouth. That must have been a really good feeling to get a hit out like that.
Yeah, it's been a bit of a shaky start, I guess you could say. I've been a little bit unlucky with a few injuries, not at the best times as well, but obviously that's behind me now, and to get 90 minutes and to get on the score sheet was obviously very pleasing for me, so hopefully I can use that and kind of push on and try and get into the starting team from there.
And is there conversation internally about the chance for promotion? You know, you're sitting in that promotion spot for at least for a playoff. You may not be a great chance of finishing first or second, but you must hold, and the club must hold serious contentions to get into those playoffs. Is that a conversation you and the gaffer and the boys are having?
Yeah, no, of course. I think this league obviously is very unpredictable, and I think there's still 20 games to go, so we're not getting too carried away, but at the same time we're on a really good run at the moment, and our last 10 results or something have been really good, so we still know there's a long way to go, but for sure obviously getting in one of those playoff spots is the goal, and last year we were in the playoffs and kind of missed out the last hurdle, but hopefully this year we can go one better.
And briefly, I mentioned in the intro the possible signing with Athletic Bilbao, and what I didn't mention was the fact that your grandparents on one side of your family have a Basque heritage, and for those who are unfamiliar, Bilbao only sign players who either are from the region or have a connection with the region. How close did you go to signing with the club, mate?
Yeah, no, I guess we were in early stages of negotiation, and I guess at obviously being a free agent at that time of year as well, right in the middle of the transfer window, was quite a hectic period, and things were going left to right quite often. But I think that just before I signed for Ipswich, that was the deal that I thought was most likely to go through. So I guess that just shows how unpredictable and crazy the transfer window can be, and you really never know what's going to happen. So, from that perspective, it was obviously surprising. But now I'm here, I'm really happy to be here, and hopefully I can try and get some more minutes sometime soon, and push on for promotion to the Premier League next season.
Tommy, I reckon it's every young footballer's dream when they're kicking the ball in the backyard with their brother or cousin or next door neighbour, is to score a goal in an FA Cup match. You did that a few days ago. That must have been pretty cool.
Yeah, I guess in the last few years as well, goals have been quite hard for me to come by. So to score a goal in any game is a fantastic feeling. But particularly scoring my first goal for Ipswich, which was obviously fantastic, and in such a great cup competition. So hopefully, like I said before, I can just use that goal, and hopefully it's the first of many.
Well, tell us about the move from Holland to England, just from a personal perspective. What's it like living in and around Ipswich, and the club, the local support? Are you enjoying the new experience in the UK?
Yeah, no, definitely. Obviously, the football here is much different to what it was in Holland, but I guess growing up I always watched English football like most Australians do, so it's always been a kind of ambition of mine to come here, so it's something I'm really enjoying so far, and it's a really nice part of England as well, and there's some really nice kind of countryside towns and that kind of stuff, so living here I'm really enjoying it as well, and I guess the club as well has a huge history, and they have a really nice stadium and really great facilities, and it's very professional, and I guess that's kind of one thing that surprised me, is just how big the club is. Obviously I knew a little bit about Ipswich Town before I came here, but the amount of supporters they have all over the UK is quite amazing. And obviously, 20 or 30 years ago as well, they were European champions. So it's a club with a lot of history and a lot of high expectations.
So that's a good point you raise. When you first went to the club, did the club make an effort to educate you about the history of the club? Because it is a very historical club in England.
Yeah, no, I think obviously when you're just walking through the stadium and that, you see the trophy room and you see the old players that they've had there and all this kind of stuff. And I guess it's just kind of, it was kind of a rude awakening, I guess, when I got there. It was much, more elite than I gave it credit for. And I think that was probably, hugely persuasive and why I came here as well. I think it's a club with ambition, and in the last kind of 10, 15 years, it's been a little bit of a sleeping giant, I guess you could say. So I think the last few years we've kind of got our ambition back, and hopefully we can get to the Premier League, and I think that's where this club belongs. So.
You mentioned in one of your earlier answers that the Championship was very different to the football in Holland. Can you just expand a little bit on that?
Yeah, I think in Holland, obviously, it's very technical and tactical, and I think the game's quite slow-paced. I think here it's quite the opposite. It's very end-to-end, and it's very physical and direct, and everybody's quite quick. So it's just a completely different way of going about the game. And obviously it takes a little bit of time to adjust, which is normal. But I think that, every week that I keep training and the more games I get under my belt, the more kind of used to it I'm getting. So, hopefully sooner rather than later I can start putting in regular performances and show everyone, why I'm here.
Well, Mick McCarthy, your coach, he's a coach with a lot of profile. He's got a lot of personality as well. I read during the week that he just thinks you need more games. Do you think he's going to give you more games?
Yeah, well, I think obviously the FA Cup just started last week, and we have another game next week in that, and this time of year is always very busy, and I think we still have 20 league games left between now and the start of May, plus playoffs, hopefully. So, I guess there's still so many games left, and things, crazy things happen here. And this, for me, the only thing I can do really is just be ready to make sure that whenever I get my opportunity that I'm ready to take it.
And Tommy, from the perspective of a guy who lives and breathes football, is it an exciting time to be in England watching the Premier League as perhaps at its most competitive in recent years? It must give you a lot of enjoyment just to watch, but also from the point of view of a club like yours, to see a club like Leicester, for example, sake, who at one minute they were going to be dropped down to the Championship, but the next minute they're at the top of the league. If you do get that chance to get into the Premier League, the opportunity there to really put yourself in the world stage shop window is one that that must be very exciting.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think one thing I've noticed about England is that it's kind of the place you come to get noticed, and even in the Championship, the amount of exposure you have and the amount of people watching the games is remarkable. Obviously the Premier League is a completely different level again, and I think the nature of English football is that it's very unpredictable, and any team can kind of beat anyone on any day. So that's part of the reason why everyone loves to watch it. So for sure, if we were to get to the Premier League, that would be extremely exciting and obviously a fantastic opportunity. So I guess at the moment we're just doing everything we can to try and make sure that happens.
You're with Rob Gilbert and Michael Edgley on Box to Box on NTS News Talk Sport. We're talking to Socceroo champion Tommy Orr, currently playing his trade with Ipswich Town. And speaking of the Socceroos, are you still do you hear a lot from Ange Postecoglou in terms of the Socceroo training camps and upcoming qualifiers, etc.? What's the status there in terms of ongoing communications and planning around the Australian national side?
Yeah, well, I guess in terms of one-on-one contact, it's not so much, but I guess all the players in contention to be selected are in regular contact, daily contact, in fact, with the kind of staff working for the Socceroos, letting them know what kind of training we're doing, how many minutes we're playing, and all this kind of stuff, so that when they choose the team, they can make informed decisions about who's at what kind of level physically and mentally and all these kinds of things, who needs a rest, and they kind of know everything before we've even gone into camp. So I guess from that kind of perspective, the contact never stops, I guess you could say.
What about contact with your Socceroo teammates? There's a few of you in the Championship. Do you get to say hello to them, or is it just too busy?
No, I guess For sure. Obviously, when we play against them, I saw Massimo Luongo when we played QPR a few weeks ago, and it's always fantastic to catch up. And obviously, I'm keeping in contact with them through text and that kind of stuff. But and this weekend we're playing against Preston, so Bailey Wright will be there as well. So it's always nice to catch up.
So Bailey will be trying to kick you, basically.
Probably.
So that's exciting, mate. So what a time to be there in England and really developing your career. We've seen some of your best, but we know a lot of your best is yet to come. So, Tommy Orr, it's been fabulous to have you on Box to Box. We hope to have you on again. We wish you every success with Ipswich Town and look forward to seeing you in the green and gold again in the real near future.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for having me.
That was Tommy Orr. Ben Soro Perez with his roundup of European football next.
Box to Box.
Can you believe it?
The Chemist Warehouse.
Home of real brands and real savings.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
Yes, you are with Rob Gilbert and Michael Edgley on Macquarie Radio NTS. This is Box to Box. And now for his weekly insight into the English Premier League and Europe in general, former Brighton and Hove Albion insider Ben Soro Perez. How are you feeling, Ben? You're not in the studio tonight, mate. You're a bit poorly.
Yeah, not great. Just one of the hazards of New Year's resolutions and trying to go for a run. It's a dangerous game.
Well, we know half of Brighton and Hove listen to this. So just want to update your mum and your grandma and let them know what you've done.
As you do, just running. Pretty simple, one foot in front of the other. But somewhere along the line, I've managed to tweak my knee again. Just had it on ice and elevated all day. It's been good.
Well, that's given you the opportunity this week to watch, endless football matches from Europe. So you must have a bit of info for us.
Yeah, I watched a few this week. Hard really to know where to begin, I guess. It seems like we're forever talking about United and...
Well, you've got to start with Leicester. You've got to start with Leicester.
But let's go with Leicester. So, their supposed luck, everyone keeps saying it, but it doesn't seem to show any signs of running out. Beat Spurs 1-0 in the week with a Robert Huth goal, so they're not, goals coming from elsewhere other than Vardy and Mahrez and the usual suspects. So they're actually joint top now, I think, with Arsenal, top of the table, after they drew with Liverpool. I actually caught a lot of that game. That was pretty good. I think Liverpool are really taking to Klopp's adjustments and the way he wants them to play. Unlike recent performances where they conceded goals and not perhaps looked themselves, they stuck in it with this one. Drew 3-3, very entertaining game. It leaves Arsenal at the top joint with Leicester, as I said. And at this time of the season, January is a huge thing, but it doesn't seem to be affecting Leicester at the minute. I don't know if anyone's coming in for their players or not. There hasn't been much activity at all, but it certainly indicates that, the Foxes have got what it takes to keep riding this momentum, I guess, towards the end of the season. Back to United. Drew with Newcastle, not that fantastic. But Wayne Rooney, he actually scored twice in the week now. So he's actually quietly just, knocking off records here and there. And I think he's now the joint top all-time Premier League scorer for one club.
Ben, interestingly enough, when I was watching the press conference from Louis van Gaal, I thought for a moment Mark Van Aken was in the room because he made a comment that was pretty interesting towards a journalist. Do you remember that?
Yes. Yeah. It's a far cry from, Christmas before, when he was toasting, the journalists with mince pies and wine and wishing everyone a happy new year. But apparently at the end of the game, there's varying audio clips of it online. It's not necessarily particularly clear because he wasn't right next to the mics, but apparently he just calls one of the journalists a silly fat man. So... that would suggest all is not well behind the scenes.
Yeah, and I think in the defence of the great Mark, pots and kettles and black and those sorts of things might be thrown up in this conversation, because this studio isn't packed with lightweights, and I think the big Mark, mate, he might be just one of many that could fit that billing.
No, I just thought Mark was there when I heard Louis van Gaal utter those words. I thought Mark might have been there, but no, he's still with us in Australia. Let's go on to elsewhere in midweek, and Jermaine Defoe. Remember him, Ben?
Yeah. Do you?
I do. I do. Yeah. I actually do. But he was back in town.
Yeah, bit of a journeyman, you know, towards the latter end of his career. But back to hat tricks for Sunderland, which I don't think anyone saw coming necessarily. You know, typically Allardyce teams don't necessarily score bundles of goals. I think they put four past Swansea, but I mean, Swansea are a sad state of affairs, so I don't know how much you can take into look into that as such. But it's interesting. I don't know that Defoe offers something every week. I think if you put him against a physical imposing back four, he won't do very much. But I think he's going to be he's going to be relied upon by Allardyce basically to try and keep Sunderland in the league. I don't know what they're planning for the transfer window, but he's going to be a huge part of that.
And what about our friend Huss Hiddink at Chelsea? I think they really only stumbled to a 2-2 draw against West Bromwich Albion.
They can't win two in a row, can they?
No.
No, I think what that's showing is, you know, everyone was very quick. Well, not everyone apart from Chelsea fans. A lot of neutrals and critics were very quick to jump on Mourinho and say, oh, he's lost the dressing room, he's done this. That's why the team aren't performing. But I think this is proving that perhaps it is a little bit deeper than that. Diego Costa looks more interested in fighting people than scoring. Hazard's out the team. Willian continues to be the best player. They're not very strong at the back. They're letting goals in that they wouldn't normally let in. And drawing 2-2 with West Brom is, I think, further indication of it's almost like a project now, I think. They have to reinvest, you know, quite substantially throughout the squad. And I think this is just beginning to highlight the weaknesses within that. That these are games that last year, the year before, years before that, that you'd look at on paper and then you wouldn't even need to watch it. You know they'd grind out a win. But they're letting the points go now.
But it isn't an indication of their decline that the match in the end did go to the form guide, didn't it? That, 13th and 14th on the ladder, that's the way it rolled.
Yeah, very much so. Talking to people, and I think, myself, watching what I get to see of it, you still look at Chelsea on paper and you look at the names, Fabregas, Costa, these aren't players that have been acquired for small amounts of money. And comparatively to West Brom, who, picked up Darren Fletcher from United, for example, and Johnny Evans and various other players, they're not spending anywhere near the same amount of money. So you have to wonder why it is that they're getting the same results. So I think that's a lot for Gus to work out as the season goes on. But I think they've got Everton this weekend, which is always a good indication. You know, Everton, they drew 0-0 with City in the week, which is a good result for them. You know, Everton, the way Martinez sets his teams up, they like to play three at the back when they have the ball, and when they don't have the ball, it becomes a back five. But they get very susceptible and caught out by that. But a goalless draw at City would have done them good. And in Romelu Lukaku, obviously, they've got a former Chelsea employee who will probably be pretty keen, I would imagine, to remind them of what they let go. I think a few clubs are reportedly looking at him. Obviously, he's going to be hugely expensive. I think he cost Everton £28 million. But in an age when Costa's not scoring, like Remy, I don't know if he's injured or whatever, but he's not scoring either, it seems, quite short-sighted of Chelsea to buy Lukaku and loan him out for a bit and then just get rid of him. So I think that's a big one to look forward to. Other than that, obviously, perhaps the biggest game of the weekend is Liverpool v United. Obviously, huge for both sides. I don't know what you guys take on it or if you saw any of the Liverpool-Arsenal game, but if you did, I would imagine, like me, you think Liverpool would be hard-pressed not to win this one, I think.
Yeah, well, it's a high-scoring result, clearly, but if you're going with form, then I think you have to suggest Liverpool, if they can eke out a 3-3 draw against the latter leaders, then they're the winners, but you'd still think it's going to be a high-scoring affair.
Yeah, I think, it'll always be tetchy. Those games always are. There's always needless tackles and all the rest of it that goes with a rivalry like that. I don't know that Van Gaal knows what his best 11 is. And even if he did know what his best 11 was, I don't know if he knows where he'd play them on the pitch. Marouane Fellaini, I don't rate the guy at all. But you watch Liverpool and they can't defend set pieces. So it's an indication from United's perspective, well, from most of us' perspective, that Fellaini is probably going to play. There was an interesting stat about Fellaini the other day that came out, which is something like United are yet to lose any of the 12 games when he hasn't played this season. But when he does play, they've lost almost half the games.
Damning.
Yeah, pretty damning indictment of, I don't want to be harsh to him. He's obviously a talented footballer, but it just doesn't work.
We're listening to Ben Soro Perez on NTS News Talk Sport. Digital radio and streaming on the NTS app. You can also search for us on the NTS on TuneIn Radio. Ben, another game on Sunday, which I think is a quite a relevant one, is Stoke and Arsenal. It's a bit of a banana skin for Arsenal. Stoke's had some pretty good scalps at home this season. So Stoke in seventh position on the ladder. Arsenal top of the table with Leicester. It'll be an interesting game at least.
Yeah, definitely. I think Liverpool exposed some defensive frailties within Arsenal's ranks, and Stoke, they're lively going forward. You know, they've got Shaqiri, Arnautovic, Boyan, Afellay. They've got some really good options going forward, and they will give Arsenal trouble, I think, especially if, you know, they can get at the, what's his name, Mertesacker. I think his lack of pace, you know, in a game like this could be key. And you know what Stoke can do. They're going to get stuck in. They don't mind the physical side of things. And over the years, that's always what catches Arsenal out. But, you know, I think Arsenal, they should win it, really.
Well, I think that's a tough game. And obviously the other, chart topper Leicester, they've got a trip to Aston Villa, who's won their first game in how many games, a long time. So that'll be interesting as well.
Yeah, well, I don't by any means think Villa have turned a corner. There were some interesting scenes from the FA, I think it was the FA Cup in the week when
That was interesting.
The players were getting shouted at by their own fans, getting on the coach, and Nico Richards was trying to calm things down after the game. I think, you know, they're not a lost cause yet, Villa. You know, there may be hope that they can eke out some results and get back in touch with those around them, but it's looking almost a certainty already that, you know, if you were putting money on it, that would, they'd be one of the definites for relegation at the end of the season.
And before we go, mate, the Peanut Gallery, being Mark Van Aken, has asked us to make sure we ask you, how did Zizou go, Zinedine Zidane, in his debut as manager at Real?
Oh, yeah, he did all right. from a personal perspective, wasn't paying too much attention to the Real Madrid game, but
I think Mark's saying.
Yeah, he's just saying because you said it was going to be a bust. But I know I was his great defender, and you and Mark and Edge in particular all said he was going to go absolutely ordinary. So I was his one defender. Oh, so I'm pleased to know that at least one of the team got it right.
Give him a real test. I think when he in Europe against some tactically astute manager, he'll get found out.
Good on you, mate. Well, look, good to have you on the show again, mate. Get that knee better. All these blokes in the studio here are old enough to be your grandfathers. We got wobbly knees, but we still turned up to do the show, mate. So just make sure that you just rest up and get yourself better, Benny.
Will do. Cheers, Rob.
See you, mate.
See you later.
Box to box.
Can you believe it?
The Chemist Warehouse.
Home of real brands and real savings.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
Welcome back to Box on NTS News Talk Sport. You're with Rob Gilbert and Michael Edgley. You're listening to us either on digital radio, you're streaming on the NTS app, or you've searched for us on NTS on TuneIn Radio. It's stoppage time. We welcome back Mark Van Aken. The fourth official says Rob, there's 10 to go, and Mark is very eager to get involved.
What's and we're at the Box website, Michael.
Exactly, boxtoboxnts.com.au. We can see your work. He always forgets
he's
the website.
An old media guy.
Yeah, he always forgets the podcast. He forgets the podcast.
It's the new age,
well,
mate.
What I am is an open-minded sharer of the airtime, and I don't want to make it sound like I'm the only one who knows what's going on. So I give you the opportunity
to come on and
have a crack.
I see what's going on.
Zing.
Now, how about a ride? We've 10 minutes, was it? 10 minutes we've got?
Yeah. Yep.
I'll do my best.
Fergie time this week.
So I can talk now for 10 minutes. I've got 10 minutes of right of reply.
Okay, I'm leaving
for
early.
All the slanderous stuff that's come my way over the last 2 hours. Is that what I'm hearing?
Well, this
starting
is your
with
decision.
Michael Edgley. With the
Nigel,
Louis
have you got the beep button
comment
ready, mate, just in case?
You might have to dump me, even though I'm in the... Well, yeah, you can still do that. Now, first right of reply. That last segment with Ben Soro Perez. One, who misses a desk job? which is basically this, with a sore knee. Anyway, moving on. Now, I've actually got, this is week 10 of Box to Box, but I've got my week 9 notes open for you, Mr. Gilbert, because I'm going to reread.
Yep.
Mourinho worked on a camp, blah, 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 blah. Lads, I hate Real with a passion. So this was talking about Zizou. But I must say, I'm excited to see what Zizou brings to the table as gaffer of arguably the world's biggest club. I would hardly say that that was me being unsupportive of the great man.
Agree. And I think actually the beauty about having a podcast is you can replay things that
say
people
producer
say.
Producer Nige, can we bring that up? Not on short notice.
Not on short notice, but I do recall the only dissenting voice about Zizou's capacity to be a good coach was... the great man Rob Gilbert. So he does need to be.
Ben poo-pooed it. That was the whole point.
Jeez, you're very sensitive, boys. Ben, I mean, I'm just trying to have a bit of fun here with you. And I was asking the question, being the devil's advocate last week, mate. I love Zizou, you know, and I'm pleased to hear he's done so well. But I'm glad to see that my arrow hit its mark.
Oh, Caro's arrow. Robbie's. What rhymes with Robbie's?
I'm sure you'll think of something. On with it. Come on. What's next?
Oh, Robbie's Gilbert. Rocket.
Boom, there we go, Robbie's rocket. Zing. Now, at age 43 and 99 days, and in fact this is off a report midweek, so let's say 43 and 102 odd days, Leicester City's number two, we know who that is of course, Mr. Mark Schwarzer, is on the cusp of being crowned the oldest player ever to appear in England's top flight, writes the World Games' David Lewis. If Schwarzer, who hung up his gloves after claiming 109 caps in 2013, makes a Premier League appearance after the 16th of March, he will eclipse the record set by John Burridge, who was keeping goal for Manchester City back in 1995 at the venerable age of 43 years and 162 days. Can he get there, gents?
Hope he does.
I certainly hope he does. And the thing is, yeah, we probably think he's going to pick up an FA Cup or a League Cup if they're still in that ridiculous competition over the next couple of months. But will he get the nod in a Premier League game? That's the question.
Well, there's the advantage. I mean, Kasper Schmeichel has been keeping as well as anybody in the competition right now.
Played a cracker
now,
on the weekend, yeah.
Yeah, so but you know, goalkeepers get injured. Take rest. But I think that's the point, really, is he'll get another game this season. We'll see him in the League Cup or the FA Cup if their run continues. But to get a start, if Schmeichel continues to be.
Oh, there's no doubt. I mean, Schmeichel's not going to get dropped for him, but, no. You know, can we just hope there is a couple of some midweek fixtures, whatever it might be? It's almost if Leicester dropped away like we anticipated they would, maybe there's a chance for a bit of nostalgia, maybe some merchandise for the club, whatever it might be, but they're just going from strength to strength. But let's hope that Big Schwartzy can get in there, and I'm still hopeful of getting him on the show at some stage over the next couple of weeks. Maybe wait till March 16.
Yeah, Mark, Ben Soropres in his little segment mentioned
not
the.
Ben again.
No, we did mention the Villa fans cracking up against the coach. I think we've got some audio that we should have a listen to.
Yeah, it was the skipper, Micah Richards. Now, look, for most, that was sounded a bit like gibberish, Michael. Did. There's probably a few swear words in there. Luckily, with the thick Birmingham accents, we probably didn't quite understand it in this part of the world. But what that was Micah Richards, the skipper of Aston Villa, after another terrible result last weekend, basically going to the sideline, talking rugby league there, to the sideline and just chatting to the fans. And to be fair, it could have got ugly and all the stewards were around there getting really worried, but he was pretty open and honest, said, hey, yep, we're trying our hardest. What did you make of it all?
Well, what I made of it is I actually was watching when that was unfolding, and what I found interesting was the fans were talking about to their captain that you were showing no passion, the team showing no passion, and the captain was saying, no, we are, we're trying. So it was actually really interesting. It was was very raw, it was very emotional, and it was probably not something that would happen in a Premier League fixture, but because it was at the Exeter City Ground and all that sort of stuff, it was the fans were very close to the side of the ground. They were in the old-fashioned dugout, which we see around Premier League games in Victoria and New South Wales. It was really raw and it was really grassroots stuff. And it was passionate.
And it
was the fans being passionate.
It worked because it...
Well, they got a result in the next Premier League game, didn't they? Yeah,
exactly.
What I like about Mike, it's, he's basically saying, yeah, we have got the passion. So he's basically saying, like, yeah, but we're just crap. And I don't think too many Villa fans would argue with that. We saw some footage. I saw you, Mike, actually looking at a replay of the midweek Premier League stuff before a heated exchange on the touchline. What I keep using rugby league, the sideline, in the big game that Ben touched on, the 3-3 with Arsenal and Liverpool at Anfield. Arsene Wenger going toe-to-toe with Jurgen Klopp. And Jurgen Klopp, what a celebration for one of the goals. He started doing a bit of the stuff that told the old Adelaide United manager, whose name's completely Guillermo. Mm. No, Guillermo's the current one. Anyway, help me out. Doesn't matter. Moving on. Let's have a listen to some of the audio from Arsene Wenger post-game, clarifying what exactly was going on there between him and Jurgen Klopp.
It seems to be you spoke to Jurgen after about half an hour and you seemed to be laughing with each other. What was it about the conversation?
After half an hour?
Yeah. When you spoke to each other in the technical area, is it?
Oh, I told him just calm down because I will send you in the stand here. Because at Liverpool, you know, it's very tight. You're very close to each other. And he had a little problem with the fourth official that he will explain to you much better than I can do because I don't know really why. I think it was for a throw-in, but it was all right. We had a... there was no no bad feelings at all.
Well, there you go. Josip Gumbel was the player, the coach I was looking for before we got through to that. So, sloppy there for me. But that was interesting from Arsene because it looked pretty heated on the sideline there. And the way he first said, I'm going to send him into the stand, it did sound like he meant I was going to thump him and put him over the fence. He did then clarify. He meant the fourth official.
That's but right. Again, he said, here at Liverpool, they'll send you into the stand. So it was good.
As Arsene.
But I was going to say, at the arse end of the world, things can be misinterpreted.
Zing. Oh, another Robert Rocket.
This is deteriorating, this one.
I'm quoting Paul Keating.
It is stoppage time. That's what it's for. It's junk time.
What about Gary Lineker?
Yes, we've got some more audio here. Gary Lineker, match of the day, of course, the past time.
This is actually worth listening to. This is good.
The UK. This is a debate. So to set it up for you folks, because of course you can't see it, it's Gary Lineker hosting match of the day. Alan Shearer was there. Who else was on there with him? Someone else. Escaped me, sorry. But let's have a listen to what Gary Lineker. It was a big debate about handball.
If it hits your arm, if it hits your hand, it's a penalty. Come what may, like hockey with feet.
Yeah, I think. No, I don't think that. No, I think you have to take your arms off to achieve that. But it's just simple.
Yeah, but if you're away, you keep them out.
Deliberate handball. The referee's got to be certain that it's deliberate. Then it's a penalty. Forget all the farce
about making yourself
and everything
bigger.
Else.
That's quite interesting.
I bet you do. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we've all done that with the hands. Sorry. Anyway, we'll move on. Back to tonight.
Now, Gary Lineker, a revered football player and obviously football pundit now of BBC, no one would call him a wanker, would they? But he's basically fessed up there, isn't he?
Very funny.
Sorry, you're still on the air. Not much time. I can see the fourth official. You got a bit of news about a player naming a daughter very cheekily.
Well, this took some international press. I was listening to Talk Sport in London, Andy Goldstein's sports bar, and they had this segment running where they were asking a question as to which story was the true story and which wasn't, and there were four really exaggerated stories, and the one that that was selected as the one that was not real was one where it was a story around a guy around 4 years ago. His wife had had a baby, and he'd convinced her to name their child a rather exotic name, La Nezra. And 4 years later, he confessed that he chose that name because it's Arsenal spelled backwards, which I thought was fantastic.
That takes me back to my days at FFV where I was AFL style trying to get the NPL clubs to put their teams in the paper, which was heavily resisted by a number of clubs. And I'll name and shame Oakley Cannons. They got fined week in, week out. And then by about round 16 of the season, they named their team. I've got to admit, I didn't look. I put them straight in the paper. And there was Note Another Fine, which was not another fine. I got read the right act for that one, but that actually got published in the Herald
Sydney.
By Tony Pignata.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, there you go. Well done, Mark. Good stuff. What have we got to go?
Not much. Over to you, Rob.
Yeah, I think that is it. That is Box to Box for another week. We've talked about the PFA crisis. We've talked about the Sydney Derby. We've been through the A-League. We've had Tommy Orr on the show and Mark Van Aken. It's been another great edition of Box to Box. We look forward to having you next week on Box to Box on NTS Macquarie Radio News Talk Sport.